All right, guys. Episode number 3 of The Perspective. I have my friend Craig Downey here. Today's episode is about the subtle art of not giving a fuck. such a great title by Mark Manson. Craig has a lot, says a lot about this book and really enjoys it. Can you tell me why you thought this was a good book to kind of review and look over?
Well, to be honest, Seamus, Mark makes a point. I've got to put this out there. Mark makes a point at the start that even the fact of not giving a fuck is in itself giving a fuck about something.
Yes.
So he's not physically saying don't give a fuck about anything.
Yes.
Because that's no way to live your life. He's just saying maybe pick and choose exactly what you don't give a fuck about.
Such a great quote.
But the reason why I love the book and the reason why I thought we should review it is there's no nonsense in him. He's straight to the point.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's my personality, so I can relate to what he's saying.
Yes.
I don't know how you felt about that.
For me, I thought it was I was a wee bit apprehensive at first. I read the reviews, and a lot of people had given it a 1-star and stuff on Audible, and I was saying, oh, right, he says fuck a lot in this here. And I thought the first few chapters was really good, but the ending was pretty shit. But I would disagree. I think there was a lot of good information from chapter 1 right through to chapter 9. Some of the titles, the first chapter was The Subtle Art of Not Giving a Fuck. Chapter 2 was The Happiness is a Problem. 3 is You Are Not Special. 4, the value
but you
of
are.
Suffering.
You're special,
Seamus. Right. I don't know what way to take that now.
Oh, no, you're special. No, don't mean it that way.
chapter 5 was You Are Always Choosing. Number 6 was You're Wrong About Everything. Number 7 was Failure is the Way Forward. Chapter 8 was The Importance of Saying No. And what a great chapter at number 9. And The End, and Then You Die. You know, so
it's straight to the point,
as you said.
It's true. He's not lying.
First chapter, I read it on Audible, so I made the point of sitting down, listening to it, making notes as I was going along, rewind if I needed to recap anything. But on the first chapter, the first thing I've written is being comfortable about being different. You know, the stare failure in the face and give it the middle finger. This is, the first thing that I've written down. So it's challenging for everybody to be different or to come across as, well, nearly even being yourself, you know, would make you different. It's hard for a lot of people.
This point in the book, like especially chapter 1, but he says it throughout. I think, no one is the same.
No,
he mentions later on about social media and extraordinary people.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if everyone was extraordinary, then no one would be extraordinary at all.
Yes, exactly.
I think what makes people personally extraordinary, so this links into what you said there about everyone being different, mm-hmm. is you being different makes you extraordinary. So everyone is different. I'm a different person. What, like, not everyone will like me, not everyone will like you, Seamus. That's just how things go. And to be honest, just to quote Mark Manson, I don't really give a fuck what people think of me. All right, don't give a fuck. But everyone is different. But it's hard then if you're judging yourself based on everyone else. And I think that's what Mark says, especially in that first chapter.
Yes. And again, there, like, you have the choice. You're always choosing what to give a fuck about. We're going to say fuck a lot in this. and it's about being selective about where you put that.
There's only so much energy you've got in life.
Yes.
You know what I mean? you put it into something that's frivolous and you can't do anything about, mm-hmm. then what's the point? Someone said to me recently, or I heard a coach saying about if it doesn't matter in 3 years' time, then it doesn't matter fucking now, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
I've heard that quote before. But there's a wee thing you said there in chapter one, a famous, was called the feedback, look from hell. Did you read that?
Yeah, I obviously did. Yeah. Like,
he says there's an insidious quirk to your brain that if you let it, it can drive you absolutely batty. He says, tell me if this sounds familiar to you. You get anxious about confronting somebody in your life. That anxiety cripples you and you start wondering why you're anxious. Now you're becoming anxious about being anxious. Oh no, doubly anxious. Now you're anxious about your anxiety, which is causing more anxiety. Quick, where's the whiskey? What a quote, what a line. We all do it. We worry about shit we don't need to worry about.
Yes, yes.
You know, likes of myself recently having loads of interviews. Oh, panicking before the interview, but then coming out feeling all relaxed. And I had about 6 in 1 week. Mm-hmm. So I was still going through the same anxieties before and after. So that was the part in chapter one that really stood out for me.
That's a nice one, man. And you got a job at the end of it, didn't you?
Yeah, thank goodness for that, eh?
Brilliant. Look, so we he'll go through this in a little bit more detail throughout the book. But one of the things that was on chapter two was the actual story that he had with regards to the king and his son, the prince, where the king gave the prince everything and he didn't have the need for anything. But there was one day he was in the town and he saw poverty, he saw sickness, he saw a lot of this, and the prince grew to kind of, what's the word I'm looking for? Like,
self-enlightenment
in a way, yeah, and it felt maybe bad for having all the riches and having no problems and stuff, and so he left his royalty and went into suffering and stuff and disease or whatever, and eventually found his way. He had a light switch was on and like was like, I don't need this really, like, and he became a Buddha.
Yeah.
And suffering is like, is a way for, what was it, nature to tell you that you need to acquire change. But could you sort of touch on what you think the prince was trying to get at, or like in his head, you know, he was sort of resenting his father for having all this and not doing anything about it, or?
Well, how can you grow as an individual if you don't have failure? Mm. You don't have, and I'm going to link failure to suffering here, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Or solving problems. Mm-hmm. He links in chapter two. This is probably just after the story. Like, happiness comes from solving problems.
Yes.
So failures or suffering. So when you solve your health problem by buying a gym membership, you create new problems, like having to get up early to get to the gym on time. Yeah. And I love this quote, sweating like a meth head for 30 minutes on an elliptical trainer and then getting showered and changed for work so you don't stink up the whole office. Every problem you have in your life will then result in further problems going down the line.
Yes.
Now, linking back to the prince story there, you know, how could he grow as an individual if he never had hurt, suffering, pain, failure?
Mm.
So, as a prince in the story, he would have had everything given to him. Mm-hmm. He would never have had to strive to do better. He would never have learned from anything, because you can't learn unless you fail at something. Mm-hmm. And there's a chapter later on that I've highlighted, and it links into the whole failure thing and how you can't be successful without the failures. So failure in itself is actually success.
Mm-hmm.
And I have pulled on that quite recently in regards to, you know, being made redundant from a job. So I use that as a stepping stone to push myself on further, if that makes sense.
Yeah, 100%.
I think that's what he's making reference to. But then, you know, judging them as valor for not going through that suffering.
Yeah.
You know, I wouldn't agree with that at all, because it's not his father's fault that he was king.
Yeah.
You know, he was a prince at one time, so he just never seen what this prince has seen and realized what what is actually needed in life. But I think what he means by suffering is he needed to grow as a person, and he couldn't grow as a person unless he had seen suffering and pain and failure. I think that's what that links into.
I think it's a great point, like, as well. But at the same time, it's a shame that he had to kind of go through all that for such a long time to kind of realize it. But sure, pain teaches you what your limitations are and how you can sort of work through them and stuff.
But a lot of people out there might be going through a hard time. I don't think about using it as a learning experience. They'll just get overwhelmed by shame or the feeling of I am a failure because I A, B, C, or because A, B, and C has just happened to me. But that's just not how life works. You know, how can you then become a better person from that? You know, and if anyone, you know, is going through a hard time at the minute, what with everything's going on with COVID-19, all that kind of stuff, you know, take that negative thing that's happened to your life and use it as a success. And then then you'll grow as a person and you might be a better person for it.
It's even seeing it as a way that, you know, you've been through this tough time. I can do this. Like, it gives you that reassurance that you can push through anything.
Look at relationship breakdowns. The first time you get your heart broken, you're devastated, absolutely bawling your heart out. The second time, you're not as upset. Come the third time, you've now, you've totally attuned yourself to, do you know what, I've been through this before, I know exactly how to deal with it. And you become a stronger person for it.
Yeah.
So you do. But here, a same point there, chapter 2, he mentions something called choose your struggle. He says, what pain do you actually want in your life? What are you willing to struggle for? Because that seems to be a greater determinant of how our lives turn out. Our lives are a series of struggles.
Pain
from the moment you're born to the moment you die, chapter 9.
Yes. That's a really good point. And that's, again, that is growth. And as you said, happiness comes from solving those problems and going through that pain. So it's a process. But to deny, some people deny those problems and it just accumulates and it gets worse and it doesn't get any better and it doesn't get any easier. And as you said there, the anxiety, it's a snowball effect. So facing things straight on will reduce, like, your anxiety and teach you that it's not really as bad as maybe what you first thought. Could be, say, for a bungee jump example, just like that. Do you know what I mean? You build yourself up.
Just fucking jump. Well, here, listen, I haven't been skydiving before, but I know exactly how I would do it. There's that, will it go? Will it not? I would just go in my head, what's the worst can happen here? I hit the floor at 100 miles an hour and I'm dead before I even know it. I'm just jumping and I'll just jump. I know why I'll just jump. But this is classic avoidance. People do it a lot. Like, they avoid the real core reason of why they're feeling a certain way and stuff like that. I do it at times. But it's learning and training your mind to actually realize that you're doing that in the first place.
Yes. And then, just as a look at my notes there, negative emotions is a call for you to do something, and the positive emotions is the result of doing something. Do you know
exactly
that?
So, yes. Yeah. Exactly. You will feel empowered by taking action. As a quote straight from Craig Downey's back catalog, you can use that anytime you want. Copyrighted.
Yeah, everything comes with an inherent sacrifice. Whatever makes us feel good will inevitably make us feel bad. He mentions that in chapter 2 as well.
What do you think he means by that?
Well, there's, say we'll take a relationship. Obviously, if you are, there's going to be a good feeling about being with this person, but you're going to have your arguments too. You're going to be, you know, there's, it's not going to be, it's like nature's way. There's no good without bad. Working out, exercise, you're going to feel good factor after, but during it, you know, it's like the struggle of the pain, the muscle fatigue, the DOMS. You know,
I prefer the DOMS.
You know, you're doing something right.
Yeah, you're right. Jeez, I'm walking like a crab today.
There's obviously times there that you're going to have both ends of the spectrum. And it's a balance of nature, I suppose, which he kind of talks about. You know, it's nature's way. But again, you can choose your struggle. Another example will be to climb a mountain. The joy itself should be in the climb and the work to get to the top. But you get to the top, you see the views, you see a way of accomplishment by hitting the peak of the mountain. So I guess there's no happiness really without the struggle.
There's not. But then, right, so linking to chapter 3 then on that. Chapter 3, he says, you are not special.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people need to realize that, because they run around thinking they are special and they're not special at all. The point I quoted in this was, he says, if I'm not going to be special or extraordinary, then what's the point? That's one of the titles in this book. Mm. And he said, the fact that this statement is inherently contradictory. After all, if everyone were extraordinary, then by definition, no one would be extraordinary. It's missed by some people. Being average has become the new standard of failure. It's okay to be just an average fucking person. That's all the thing I took from that there was, do you know what? You don't need to be extraordinary. You don't need to portray yourself as if you're class or you're special. You're not. It's okay to be boring and sit down most weekends because you got a mortgage to pay. That's the way I see it.
And that's if you want to do that. You've got that choice. If that's what makes you happy and a level of contentment. Other people are searching for the £1 million, which is, again, isn't wrong either. The millions of pounds in the bank account, the, you know, whatever they're searching for with regards to their happiness, again, it's individual. But again, they can't be annoyed that if they feel that they really want to sit in at the weekend, but they want money in the bank or millions of pounds, they have a goal that way, then don't get annoyed that you can't sit in at the weekend and you can't watch your movies and spend time with family or whatever. That's
the struggles they spoke about.
Yes.
You know, the sacrifices, the struggles. The failures, because if you're going for that £1 million mark and you want to become a millionaire, you're not going to get there by just being everything smooth and plain sailing.
Mm-hmm.
I recently shared something on my Instagram about, you know, hard work and success. It's not a straight line. It's not a point A to point B. It's literally up, down, up, down. It's literally like
stock market.
Yeah, up and down, up and down. You have to have your failure. You have to have your up and downs. Like Richard Branson didn't become success. He was bankrupt at the start or something.
He's been through so much. He started the record label and stuff and music. And I think the way he started his Virgin Atlantic was he couldn't get on a flight to wherever he was going, and the flight was cancelled. And so there was a group of people there looking for the same flight. So what he did was rent some sort of plane in some way and got it to fly over. He says, look, guys, I've got this plane sorted. Do you want to cop on? And that was the start of Virgin Atlantic.
Yeah.
But he made a solution out of a problem and what came of it. In the chapter 3, they talk about Jimmy. Is there a Jimmy in it? I've made a note here.
Where's Jimmy from?
Jimmy.
Where's Jimmy from?
But feeling entitled, accomplishing right. great things when you're not, they need to feel good all the time. Somebody who feels entitled likes their shit or thinks that their shit don't stink, and it's they're on a high. Jimmy hides from his problems. It's like a feel they feel good about themselves even though their life is falling apart around them. This is like a wee example that he has in chapter 3. And they can put on, as you say, this false sort of persona.
Yeah.
That everything's all good. And like say that you're...
But they will crumble eventually. They will crumble.
I think he gives the example of this guy at work or I can't remember exactly, but thinking he's great at this job and is able to talk his way, you know, but really he's not. He's not great at what he does, and as you say, it comes out like eventually. But there is people there who paint this life that they are something, or and yeah. they're really not. Yeah. But it's you have to it's just like you have to realize this yourself, and it's
100%. And you know. We link to social media quite a lot, but the people do portray themselves on it quite a lot as if, you know, their life is perfect on social media. You know, I think I put something up recently on Instagram about this, that, you know, you might look at my life and think it's Craig's carefree and happy man and all that kind of stuff. But it's just the way I live my life on social media is totally different to who I am as a person. You know, yes, I am a happy, go-lucky guy, but I can be a cranky twat too. I really can. But linking into it is, you know, as soon as I put that phone down on Instagram, I'm probably still sitting in the house watching Netflix. I'm not out doing anything. Do you know what I mean? I've got a normal life, but I only put the best of it up on Instagram.
Yeah.
And people forget that when they're viewing it. People forget that too when they're on it. But when you close that phone, and you're left in that room by yourself and your own thoughts, it's the people that are actually your family, your friends, that actually get to see the real you. You know, I think we did speak about this earlier on before coming on. You know, sometimes people need to reach out. The people that you least expect need to reach out, and they think they should. If they're listening to this today, I think if they need to speak to someone, they 100% should speak to someone. And then this is my passion. We spoke about this earlier on. Help as many people as possible. So yeah, that links into wee Jimmy, hey, from where's he from again?
I have don't know where he's from, somewhere in America maybe.
Derry. What do you think of chapter 4 then, the value of suffering?
Yes, again, we've kind of touched on that sort of from even the last day, an example of like climbing the mountain or whatever. You gotta put in the hard work to obviously reach the goal and stuff. You can talk about relationships. You can talk about learning a new skill. Suffering is that as one way that it obviously helps you grow. I want to see if what I have the problems in our life are unavoidable. Is something that I'm quoting there from the book. So yeah, you can dwell on it, or you can, as I said before, face it and figure something out. Or you can leave it and not dwell on it anymore. You know, you could be having a confrontation with someone at work and you can let it fester, or you can let it let it go. And like that quote is like not giving a fuck, just can lift the weight off your shoulders. And certain, I don't know if you can think of a time whenever you've kind of said, right, I'm just going to let it go. And I guess it's down to religion. It would be like forgiveness. And forgiving someone or something, and just kind of having that relief that
I can relate, and I think it's not a one-time decision to make. You don't just decide and like one day I'm just not going to give a fuck about nearly most of the things in my life, you have to actually consciously repeat that process over in your head. So when you get when you get that person, situation, whatever problem in your life arising again, when you get that emotive response of, oh, that's really angered me, you have to then go back into yourself straight away and go, ah, I remember that that and that person doesn't really matter. And I'm not going to let them change me today. I'm not going to let them ruin my day today by changing how I feel. I'm going to let that go. I wrote a wee piece on it about it. I woke up one day, some stinky mood. I didn't know what it was about. And I started getting ratty with people that I usually wouldn't. And within 10 minutes, I had to stop when I was about to lose my shit with the person. I had to stop and go, it's not their fault while I'm like this today. Like, big, wise your neck in. And I did. Because that was all to do with self-awareness.
Yes.
And again, this what he speaks about here in chapter 4 about the self-awareness is like an onion. There are multiple layers.
Yes.
And the more you peel them back, the more likely you're going to start crying at inappropriate times.
Yeah.
All right? Quite a lot, but I peeled back the onion, Seamus.
Yes. I think there was 3 points that I wrote on that self-awareness onion was understanding one's emotions. Number 2 was why we feel certain emotions. That would be the root cause. And then 3, your personal values. Why is this success? Or determine the nature of your problem. So that was like the 3 wee layers that he's sort of put with that self-awareness onion. But again,
Can you think of a time when you've done that?
It could be down to someone saying something in a way to you, or something as simple as that, or what else?
Someone showing disrespect or attitude, or speaking to you in a condescending manner. And because you're not like that, your morals are quite more attuned.
Yes.
You'll get offended.
Aye, but and that's one way, but eventually you can get to the point where if this is work, you could say it in your head, it's just work. It's not the end of the world. Nobody's fucking, he's not holding a gun to my head, you know, and threatening to, that could be again, just their personality. Yeah. And although you may think that it's not appropriate, it's just how they're working. You could maybe talk to them in a way that, you know, I didn't like, and being assertive with the chimp monkey and saying, I don't like the way you've talked to me like that. I prefer if you did it and see how that goes. But I mean, being aware of your values.
Do you not think you could use the onion theory based on, say, a relationship breakup, right? And both parties are hurt, but you don't talk to each other, you've split up. And if you start peeling back the onion layers of the whole relationship, well, then once you start peeling them back, you will get down to the root cause, you know, the center of the onion as to why it didn't work out. And you could use that as a process for you to actually, you know, the get over it.
Yeah, in a way. And you would come down, it would peel back to that, the values, or your own values doesn't maybe match that person, but it's understanding that. Yeah. And that person's different and stuff. It might be the way that, can you use the dishes as an example because it's come across. I don't stack the dishes before I clean them. They could be just all over the bench. And I just clean as I go. But do you know what I'm saying? It's just, I don't need that organized stacking the dishes.
That's a compromise. You know, and that's a relationship. That's a whole of, that's how Seamus does it. That's not how I do it.
Yes.
Or you know.
It's not, I wouldn't even say you're compromising. It's just understanding.
Yes. Yeah. Understand the other person. I don't think we'll ever review it. It's too complex, but Jordan Peterson's book goes more into the theory behind that and talks about how either party could actually benefit by, in a way, inadvertently better communication, yes.
Yes.
But a little bit of fucking manipulation at the same time.
Yeah.
So, but we'll not talk about the book because it's so in depth. Like, but yeah, I understand what you're talking about there. But again, on that note, right? So, no, if you peel back the onions of that specific situation, the dishes, you peel it back, you peel it back, you peel it back. When you get to the root cause, whatever it is, it could actually empower and benefit the two parties to go through the pain of peeling back the onion to get to that horrible point.
Mm-hmm.
But then you come out of it enlightened by the fact of, we now realize why it's like this. And it's the same too with relationship breakdowns. When you get to the root cause, it's the start then of the recovery process.
Mm-hmm.
And you can actually feel like a better person when you actually realize it wasn't me. It wasn't me that caused this. It was this that caused this. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. There is some value-based questions that would sort of get you thinking. And like the one that I wrote down is, why do you feel the need to be rich, so rich? How are you choosing to measure your success or failure? Perhaps, you know, say, what, you know, so... choosing what is the measure of success for you? And for you there, sitting in at the weekends, maybe spending time with family and stuff is very important to you. Other people is might be out working, success is like, and money and stuff is a great way to keep score, basically. You know, right, I've got this and right, so I'm doing quite well. But again, internally, it might not be there. You might not have that feeling of success because you had a million. You want 10 million next, and it doesn't. So it's finding what values is really important to you.
But then, yeah. So that's that. You're referring to chapter 5 there when he says that you're always choosing. You're always choosing.
Mm.
Maybe personal relationships, financial, work, career, whether to get up in the morning at 9, whether to get up at 8, whether to be late for this podcast with Seamus. That was my advice. But then, the key, to be honest, in that chapter, there wasn't much I highlighted because...
On chapter what? Chapter 4?
Chapter 5 there, you're always choosing. Right. But the one bit stood out to me in that would be the responsibility and the fault fallacy. You know, that whole thing there you said about what do you mark on your success at? Is it the financial incentive? Is it just going to work and being a good person and delivering for that company to ensure that they're a success? By like one of the things that I would have loved, what I did love actually when I was managing teams was the big guys in my team that be going through their apprenticeship and their MVQs, young kids, and me then passing my knowledge and my experience onto them.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, my knowledge and experience within an engineering firm and as an electrical engineer, that's great, which would be quite limited, to be honest. That's a joke, by the way. That's a joke. But my experience as a person, as a human being, setting standards of work, that was my point of success was to see these kids grow from straight out of training into fully accomplished electrical engineers, but then having the same standards that I set for myself.
Mm-hmm.
And my hit on success is meeting those standards on a regular, if not every time. That's me as a success, not financial. Not at all. I'm not a...
It's a byproduct.
Byproduct of it. But that's just me. Other people are different, like you said.
Hmm.
But that, again, that's my choice.
Yes.
I've chosen to do that. Again, linking into chapter 5 there, I have chosen to set that as my benchmark.
Yes. And it's just your value. What values do you prioritize? And poor values can give... of giving a fuck about things that don't matter... can really set you off in like the wrong way, and it's really it really does bring down to what are your values, and some good and bad, like good could be your honesty, your innovation, your standing up for oneself or for others, self-respect, charity, creativity, stuff like that. Bad ones could be
popularity,
yes, 100%. External events, dominance through manipulation and violence, feeling good, trying to feel good all the time, always being the center of attention, not being alone. So those were other things that you know, that were really relative there. So you have to sort of sit down.
See that whole one that you said about not being alone?
Yeah.
I truly believe that you cannot be happy with someone else if you're not happy by yourself.
Sir, I swear, I had a conversation with this woman. She must have been in her 50s. And I says, you know, I like to ask about how did you meet, you know, and I asked her, this was in New Zealand, and I was all, what is it about, we'll call him Jimmy, that you like? and she said, sir, and it's, these are so cheesy and lines, and it's so wrong. Like she said, like, this is a 50-year-old woman. Oh, he completes me, and he just, you know, all this. And it's like, I stopped, and I never challenged her on it or anything, but to come out with something like that, as you said there now, like, you have to be happier within yourself. This other person shouldn't be any way affecting, completing you. You are already complete.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
They should complement your life.
Yes. Support.
Support you, complement your life.
Yes.
And if not, make the time on this fucking earth a little bit more pleasurable.
Yes. And another thing that I like to kind of say that I wouldn't like to think that I would be making my problems someone else's problems. I would obviously take support where needed and maybe reassurance or whatever, but I wouldn't like to put my problems on someone else. And that's another thing about relationships.
That's the male ego side to us as males, man. We don't want to burden people with problems because of the whole macho man philosophy. And again, that's why the highest rate of death in the United Kingdom is suicide. Males. Every time. Mm-hmm. Males. Like, we are a high rate because we just cannot open up.
Mm-hmm.
But don't open up too much.
I don't mean that such in a way that that I wouldn't open up. I would talk about it and things, yeah. Whatever it is, finances or aye. But I wouldn't like, let me figure it out. Let me like, if you have an idea, if it's constructive or whatever, brilliant. I'll take it on board. But I have responsibilities and stuff.
Oh, we all do. Here he says to you, lad, is, and I think it's probably one of the things that backfires on me quite a lot. Potentially professionally more. honesty is a good value because it's something you have complete control over. It reflects mm-hmm. reality, and it benefits others, even if it's something unpleasant.
Mm-hmm.
Now, personally, on a personal life, I think that's a great thing to do. I think that's why I'm marmite with a few people personally, because I'm so honest. They either love that or they completely hate that.
Yeah,
but that's okay. That's their prerogative on what they decide on their opinion there. But professionally, sometimes professionally people don't like you just putting it straight to the fucking point.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. But yes. I love him saying that because the fact that you said it's a good value, it gave me some, maybe an ego boost because I know I'm like that, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
But I do know that personally I'm an ego-driven man. I know that. But I'm working on that.
Mm-hmm. There's probably times where you can, but if you're that wee bit more self-aware, then you can use it. And there is times that you need to be more subtle or whatever, but still have that in the back of your mind that you know that honesty is the best sort of way of
100%
moving forward. In chapter 5, have you anything else? I think responding to tragedy, I've written down, didn't choose the disability, but they choose how to live with it.
Yeah.
Is another good way to think about things.
I'm going to speak about a dear friend of mine. You know, you know, sadly lost his job. A great man, a great person, great at his job, just happened. And, you know, he is choosing actively to respond to it, to respond to that negative, horrible thing to happen to anyone in a positive manner. But he will get the days where he'll get up and feel like that, you know, the whole chimp paradox thing, chimp saying them, you're useless, you can't do this. Look, they give you the heave-ho, but they didn't give someone else the heave-ho. But he is actively trying to link it into what you said to about me, realizing that, yes, I'm honest, but maybe put it a wee bit more tactful across.
Yeah.
He is realizing that the reason he's thinking like that is because of that situation, but he's trying to push through it and be more positive about it and realizing his worth as a person, both personally and professionally. So that's what he's doing. And I love that about him. I really did. I gotta respect that. I went through it myself there recently, and I had my days. I was like, "You're shit, mate. What's going on?" But again, that's not me, and that's not how I want to be failed or taught. So that speaks into what you just mentioned there again.
Yeah, and which again, chapter 6. You're not wrong about everything. Seek to chip away with the wrongs today so that we can be less wrong tomorrow. Being wrong opens the opportunity for growth.
Yes.
Just a few.
Well ago, didn't I?
Yeah. So it kind of, there is overlap and stuff there.
But I on that, if I say something or give an opinion and it's based on wrong facts that I have, I want someone to correct me.
Yeah.
And I respect someone correcting me, because if I go to come out with that shite again to someone and they know I'm wrong, but they don't say nothing, I look like a tit. But if they correct me at that straight away, like you said there in that quote that he just said, that Mark Manson said, if someone corrects me straight away, I'm wrong. The next time I go and say it, I'll be right.
Mm-hmm.
And that works again, personally and professionally.
Yeah. Well, this is funny, because the next one I have is the backwards law. The more certain you are about something, the more uncertain and insecure you'll become. Uncertainty is the key to all growth.
And
always.
Oh, lad, I've seen it before. People thinking they're fucking right. They're right. Whatever their opinion is, they're right. They're right. They're right. And it could cause massive destruction being like that. You know, if you're in work and you're in a position, maybe a doctor or something like that there, and you're so headstrong and thinking you are certain it's diabetes, right? Certain it's diabetes. Someone comes along and goes, "Do you know what? There's a couple of traits there of COVID-19. No, it's diabetes, I'm telling you. So they treat the person for diabetes. 3 days in, the person's sadly got COVID-19 and they're too far gone. You know, could have some serious drastic effects being so certain about something.
Yes.
It should be an air of uncertainty. You must have had that. You must have. I'm uncertain about everything. And I think it makes you more astute and more aware.
I think, I don't know if it's uncertainty or I'm more open-minded to different ideas and different ways of thinking. I think. I'm not a stickler for my way is the only way. I'm open, and I do, it comes across in my managing side of things. I ask for, what's your thoughts on this? So how do we tackle this? Let's work as a sort of.
That's classic transformational leadership. That's what that is. If you ever heard the term transformational leadership before?
No.
When you get off this today, you Google that and you will just go, that's Seamus Feeney there. That's exactly what you just said.
Yeah, there's different types of leaderships though. Like there's the laissez-faire one where you're letting people, you give them a task, you let them do it however they want and trust them to do it. There, which sometimes is a nicer way to be, I would say. Like you're not in any worry or.
But does that not mean that you're how do I put it? There's a name for it. I don't want to be rude to you. I'm thinking.
Yeah.
It sounds like you're you're passing off responsibility in a way, but overall you are responsible.
I mean, like, obviously to a manager is to free up some time. You give someone a job, you have more time to do something else. I'm not saying every task you give out is going to be mundane and pointless, but you know, you get to that point where you are just managing. I guess Manson has a Manson's law of avoidance. Did you mention that? No.
Oh, lad, I did. He says the more something threatens your identity, the more you will avoid it.
Uh-huh.
Oh, I love that.
Can you put that onto like a scenario or?
I can. I don't want to, but I will. Right. So, me as a person, I have a certain mindset as to how something should go from A to B. I'm dying not to say it. I don't want to talk about it.
I will just talk hypothetically, sort of like that.
So if my identity is for me in life to get to point A and B, this is how I want to do it. This is my identity. This is what I believe. These are my morals. All right. Yeah. Someone comes in and says, Craig, for me to come from point A to B with you, you need to do it my way, which is totally different than Craig's way. It's now threatening my identity because it's in my morals and in my identity or DNA. So what Craig might do is bury his head in the sand for a few months and avoid the whole thing until he comes to a realization that I'm not going to go from A to B with you anymore. If that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
So decisions have to be made. And then you go to A and B alone without this person.
Right.
So that would be classic burying your head in the sand and avoiding the situation because it is classically actually threatening you as a person and what you actually believe. So you avoid it for so long.
Yeah.
It could be, I'll give an example, someone playing for a football club and doesn't get on the pitch once, feels shit about it, feels demoralised, but because he's played the club for the past 10 years of his life, he will just keep burying his head in the sand and avoiding the situation of he's not getting any game time instead of just leaving. That could be another situation. However, you know, if that happened to me, which it has in the past, I make the decision straight away on that. I'm like, this is not working, I'm gone. So there's two little examples there. So
that and they could be good and bad things as well, you know?
Yeah. What about you? Have you got any examples?
Avoiding something. I would say more, I'm getting better at it though. If someone hasn't got the same values to say as I would, and I'm just talking about it could have been I don't know, maybe I'm being judgy now thinking about it, but I would avoid a certain person maybe if they didn't maybe have the same, I don't know, I can't give an actual example of, but if they're not sort of,
I can't help you with this.
I know. I'm trying to find the right words to kind of put it in the...
It's hard, isn't it? It's hard to find those right words. We Jimmy can help you.
I guess, I don't know, I maybe would avoid people who maybe have done something that I wouldn't do.
Yes, but then you're...
But I'm judging.
You're judging them. Listen, I understand.
In a way.
Yes.
I would talk to that person for maybe 3 seconds, say, hello, how are you doing? You know, and be respectful that way. I wouldn't associate maybe myself with some person or maybe end up going out with this person or, you know, and I'm not talking girlfriend, boyfriend, I'm just talking about as a friend or, you know,
But that's okay, you know.
Oh, aye. It's okay.
You know, if you don't want to, if someone's actions, people's actions actually formulate them as a person.
Yeah.
So, you know, you don't have to like someone based on their personality. So they may be great banter, but their actions are disgusting.
Mm-hmm.
And you have chosen that, you know what, I don't like that person I don't like that guy or girl as a person. So I'm not going to give them any of my time. I don't think that's avoidance, lad. That's you actively engaging your brain of, I don't want to hear that from a person, so I'm avoiding. And that, I think that's a healthy thing. I don't think that's unhealthy. I think that's certainly healthy. Like, I avoid people like the plague if I don't like them. Like,
I guess, I don't know. I don't know if that's a good example or not, but
hey. No, that is a good example. But then what do you think in chapter 7? Failure is the way forward.
Yes. If everything you wrote or didn't get read or reviewed, then you would be right back where you started. So why not start anyway?
Yeah.
Which is one of the first things I took down whenever he, on that chapter. And you have the failure success paradox that he talks about as well. Failure is, you have to, like how bad is it? Like, if you start, and so
it's human nature, but not to want to fail. We know that.
Yeah, yeah.
But you can't succeed unless you fail.
Mm.
You know, success, he says,
it's about learning.
Yeah. Like, success should be measured on your failures.
Mm-hmm.
He says improvement at anything. You can't improve unless you know where you were at in the first place.
Yeah.
You've had to fail. So improvement to anything is based on thousands of tiny failures.
Mm.
And the magnitude of your success is based on how many times you failed at something.
Mm-hmm.
I've done that many times. Like, you want to see me trying to clean in the CrossFit, Seamus?
Yes.
The first maybe 10, 15 reps, they might look all right. When I start getting fatigued, I might look like a train coming off the railway track. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. I saw an Instagram video last night. There's this Olympic weightlifter from Cambodia. He's competed over years. There was a few times where he failed the lifts, and then eventually down the years, I think it's obviously the Olympics once every 4 years, so this was like the fourth or fifth time he's been. The fourth time he won bronze medal, like, and the last time he went, he won gold. So through all those failures, he got, and he was successful. Yeah. But never would have happened if he gave up, or never would have happened if he learned from those mistakes. Yeah. I suppose, you know.
But then we can link this into the fitness industry.
Mm.
And many people start a diet, and they might have one night where they've completely went off the rails,
mm-hmm.
but they'll let that failure completely take them off the right track.
Yes, for the rest of the.
They'll that a bit. They're done. Had 3 days there of eating everything in sight. Oh, I can't do it. That's only one day. The next day, you reset, you go again.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean?
And you have to learn. People have to sort of learn that in themselves where they can't be that.
I think you can coach people's mindset on that.
Oh, big time.
And I think it is an industry at the minute that, yes, it's massive in America. And I think it's potentially going to start growing in the UK. And I really hope it will.
Oh, it has. I would say this last while. But that would lead me to say, like, the do something principle. Like he said, just start. Like, so say the next day, just start back again, for that example of eating right. Just start working on it. Don't just sit there and do nothing and feel sorry for yourself, basically.
Yeah, exactly.
Action. Take action. It will
lead to motivation.
Exactly.
Yes, lad.
You're reading my mind here.
You don't need the motivation to start. Motivation is an actual myth, if that makes sense.
Yes, I get you.
You don't gain motivation until you fucking start something.
Yeah. Action is a motivation is the result nearly. So it's action, inspiration, motivation.
Yes.
Do something principle.
And obviously me and you are the inspiration for everyone else.
We're the middleman. The middleman.
I'll motivate you, hey, when I'm shouting at you. 10 more press-ups. 10 more. Come on.
Which leads us to chapter 8.
Yes.
The importance of saying no.
Yes.
I'm liking two chapters.
You like these two?
I like these two chapters because I think by saying no to certain bit, like you have to constantly think, is this going to be productive or is this worth my time or like what is the most essential thing for me to help this person or am I going to do something else or, you know, and it's people say, oh, go into this. I don't know if you work in corporate or whatever, but you have Zoom calls and you've got a safety check and you've got la-di-da and you work out what is the most essential thing for you to do. There's only maybe one wee bit in this Zoom call that I need. And so I'm going to do the safety check or whatever the case may be. You know, that's just a silly example. But the importance of saying no, people will respect that a little bit more.
Yeah. If you can't say no, if you can't reject something, then you stand for nothing.
Mm.
Then if nothing is better or more desirable than, as we says, if nothing is better or more desirable than anything else, then we're empty as human beings.
Mm-hmm.
Our life is meaningless.
Mm-hmm.
We're without values and therefore live our life without purpose.
No purpose, yeah.
If you say yes to everything, then where's your boundaries?
Mm-hmm.
Where's your boundaries? You'll be walked over your whole life, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And again, like you said, these last two chapters are probably, it brings all the theory there to those two chapters,
mm-hmm.
builds you up to go on. You have the right and you deserve to be able to say no to shit.
Mm-hmm.
You're like, no, I don't accept that. It's not happening. And that's the people in a professional environment too. They're more respected.
Yeah.
As a manager, if I was managing a team and I was quizzing someone or asked them to do something and they said no, but they put it across in a very professional manner.
Yeah.
I would respect that person more.
Mm-hmm. Big time. On that chapter, there's boundaries as well. Taking responsibility for their own problem. And I said that before, not taking responsibility for their partner's problems and the responsibility values. People can't solve other people's problems. And as you say, it comes across maybe as an ego thing. Mm-hmm. However, give an example of somebody like, and in a relationship, somebody comes in there in the evening and they just want to talk about work. They don't want you to sort of give you all the answers. They just want to release it off, get it off their chest, basically.
Yeah.
But they don't need, they just need you to listen. Just sort of say, oh, yeah.
Don't need a response.
No. And I think that's as a human nature, we like to kind of solve problems, stuff like that, meals and stuff. So, it's understanding there's times for it too. Strong boundaries. They realize not possible to accommodate someone 100% or you won't accommodate someone 100% or feel every need for that other person. Like, who was it? Oh, I matched that. What's that Netflix? Michelle Obama.
Right.
And she was giving the example of Obama going to the gym in the morning and she was all, look at him all going to the gym and stuff. And me sitting and I'm doing this or whatever. She grew to respect Obama because he went and did what was right for him. And so she had to find something that was right for her.
I think I aligned to exactly where you were going with it. I was about to finish your words for you.
Yes.
What was good for her?
Yeah.
And that is classic self-care.
Yeah.
Self-care. He needed self-care. That's a highly stressful job, and he knew what he needed.
Yeah.
And Michelle then obviously has turned herself. I've never seen the documentary. I must watch it now, but she's now realized, you know, I need something for me too, for self-care. Yeah. So she found it, so she did. Yeah. That was a great chapter, chapter 8.
I think that's a really good, he gives the example of Romeo and Juliet too, but I don't know if you want to talk about that or not. That's, I think the boundaries and stuff like that is really, really good. And understanding that can really help you in a relationship. Sometimes that those boundaries and stuff can hurt feelings though.
Yeah.
You know, but you can't really determine how someone else is going to feel.
That's not the responsibility of the person setting the boundaries.
Yes.
That's the responsibility of the person hearing them.
Yeah.
No, I don't know if that sounds too honest, but, you know, but then the other person can set their boundaries. Like, that's a two-way street. It's a flow of communication. I am no relationship expert, by the way. I am no relationship expert, but...
But I think we can put it into context. Obviously, if you've experienced in a relationship, and obviously reading this book, you can put the two together and kind of say, aha, yes, that works, or that makes sense, and I can put it into some sort of wording so it's understandable.
That's the reason for reading the book. You know, I thoroughly enjoyed it. There was times when I was listening to it, when I was out walking during the whole lockdown, and he would say something, and I would smile like a Cheshire cat at what he had said and how he put it.
Because
you're like, lad, you're so right.
Yes.
And you realise about it. And I think that's where I know then a book's actually starting engaging with me. But if I start actually feeling like that, I'll listen very more intently to it.
Yes.
But yeah, definitely. That whole boundaries is definitely appropriate.
What do we see? There's a few things on that chapter. How do you build trust? He talks about honesty is better, and it builds for a better person. Conflict is for expressing who will be there for us unconditionally. No one likes a yes man. You know, that was a wee paragraph I took from that. If you don't discuss the differences openly and vocally, then the relationship is based on a mutual and manipulation. Sorry, manipulation and misrepresentation.
Yeah.
Trust is also is more important ingredient in any relationship. Without trust, the relationship doesn't mean anything. Again, very straight to the point. I think they're all very good points. I can't sort of argue with any of them with regards to that. Freedom through commitment was another wee subtitle in that chapter. And he says, more is not always better. We are much happier with less. The paradox of choice. More options have like a less, like if you have more options, you're more distracted, and you'll be less satisfied because you're not making progress.
Well, he also says in that if you have more options, if you take the one option, you'll always ponder on what if, what if it was better if I had taken the other option. Mm-hmm. So the less you got, the less internal turmoil you'll have with yourself while you're doing it. I think that's what he's trying to say. And I love that. I never physically read it in the book, but the fact that you started talking about it, it must have sunk into my head when I was listening to it.
Yeah.
Because that's exactly how he puts that.
Talks about living in another country and the choices of living in different countries and all, and you know, and your choice.
He says how much of a benefit you actually living in another country.
Yeah.
Because you're seeing things from different people's perspective.
Yes.
So chapter 9, lad.
Yes.
What happens in chapter 9?
And then you die.
That's right.
Then you die.
At the end of the day, all this stuff we're going through in life, it's not going to mean jack shit because you're going to die anyway. That's the way I took about it.
Well, that you know, what are you living for? Or what is your purpose? And live that sort of purpose, so to speak, you know, rather than going through, yes, we're all going to die, but so how are you going to live that life? until that point.
Yeah. All the money.
The sunny side of death.
The sunny side, yeah. All the money, all the cars, all that stuff ain't gonna matter jack shit unless you live your life, in my opinion, in a positive and beneficial way to yourself and others. That's my opinion on that, man.
Like some of the questions that he put forward, like to make you think about this, is what is your legacy and how will it be better? You know, caring about something bigger than yourself, there is nothing to be afraid of ever. And it's just a few things I took off from chapter 9, but I like, do you know what, I'll give you an example. I think every year, maybe it's on their birthday, everybody should be brought up to a judge and jury, and you should be given this one question. He says, in your life, why should we keep you alive? Why should we keep you alive?
Fuck, that's a good one.
Think about that. If you were to be brought up on your birthday every single year and ask that question, how would you then live your life? You know, why should we keep you alive?
That's a cutthroat, very cutthroat question, isn't it?
I am,
as soon as you said that, I immediately started delving into the inner depths of why should I be on this planet right now? What am I going to get?
What good are you doing?
What good are you doing? What are you going to give back? Who are you helping? That's a really deep question. Think of that now.
We can always be doing more. Like
100%. Like, I'm actually feeling really guilty. I haven't done anything for charity now in 2 years. I know you said that from the right off. You dick. No, you're right. You could always be doing more. Personally, yeah, you could. For others, for yourself, you could be doing more.
Yeah.
But Seamus, I'm just getting started, so that's the reason why I should be staying alive, right?
Yes, right, okay.
I'm just getting started, and you are too.
Started on what, though? What are you getting?
On me, all right?
On me. Right, okay. All right.
For me, started on me, so then I could benefit others. Oh, here we go. What a line.
All these excuses about, like, I haven't got a website, or I haven't got this, or I haven't got that, and, you know, then if I was to be asked that question, it would have been done. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But we also think the time, we have times on our side, like, but...
It's not. It's the one thing in life that we haven't got.
Mm-hmm.
We haven't got an...
We have got, but it's the only thing... Yeah, you could say it like that, but it's the only thing what we have got as well is time. Like, if we're giving our time to people or certain things, that's the only currency that sort of that we have.
That's exactly the way I was going to put that. The only currency that we have that's not physical is time.
Yeah.
And it means the most to others. So you giving your time to people would mean more than you giving them a £10 note. They'll remember that more than a £10 note. They will, I'm telling you. They will. Well, maybe not me. I wouldn't mind a wee £10 note.
I was going to say.
The one line, just put a closure to it. The one line I would 100% leave this book on, right? Mm. This is the line of the century, all right?
If you were
to say to me, Craig, how would you end your review of this book? Give me one phrase. I would say the following. Seek the truth for yourself, and I will meet you there, i.e., when we've passed away. All right. I love that line.
Deep.
That's deep, man. Deep. Seek the truth for yourself, and I'll meet you there.
Yes.
You could maybe put that down the whole religious path, but I don't want to go into that. But, seek the truth for yourself, and I will meet you there. That's the only line that stood out for me in that last paragraph that I thought that's what I might take away from that.
Yes, yes.
You know, if I would say, you know, from my age now to the day I die, maybe it's just going to be an expedition of seeking the truth.
Mm-hmm.
As in, who am I as a person? How can I grow? How can I help others? All that kind of stuff. So that's what I would take away from that.
It's anyway. A nice way to finish there. Yep. It makes your makes you think for sure. No, I thought it was a really good book, and the not too long either. The 9 simple chapters were easy to listen to, and I suppose read, I suppose as well. But
I think if you had read The Chimp Paradox and you loved it, I think this book could be the next stage.
Yeah.
You know, learn the theory of how your brain works in the first book.
Yeah.
And then Mark's just going to tell you, right, this applies some common sense nature to our processes and you've been able to deal with all the shit in your life.
Yeah.
By then reverting back into the theory from the chimp paradox.
Yeah. 100%. I just see a lot of The Chimp Paradox and all these books and stuff. Yeah. You know. Excellent, buddy. I really appreciate you taking the time to have a yarn with me and chat about this book. We'll come back with another one very soon. Hopefully by August we'll get another one up. Have a great day, man, and I really appreciate it.
You too, lad. Stay good, stay classy.
Stay classy, Santi. All right, bud.
All right, lad.
Thank you.